On an iPhone? Get our app by typing in 99.1 FM Talk.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Current temperature in Reno. Don't you love the cool breezes now coming in at night and sleeping with the window open? 57 degrees. Yeah, only 57. I'm John Potter, live and local. Coming up, win tickets to Jimmy Failla and Brian Kilmeade. These are two different shows coming to Bartley Ranch. We've been giving away tickets the past 2 weeks here. And today we have a combo pair of tickets so you can both see both of you, Jimmy Failla, and also see Brian Kilmeade. So we're going to do that before 12 noon today. Just listen for your time and what you have to do when you text in. Coming up later on the show. Again, a reminder that tomorrow there's just this most awesome event, which is being put on to celebrate our 250th. Here it is. Okay, Freedom 250 at the Capitol Amphitheater tomorrow in Carson City, 1 to 4 p.m., sponsored by the good guys, the Carson City Republican Party, food trucks, music, live music. We have speakers, booths, including MC Mr. Jerry Evans. And it is tomorrow in Carson City from 1 to 4 at the Capitol Amphitheater, and it's absolutely free. Just a National Jubilee Day of prayer, praise, and thanksgiving for America. Okay, so Thursday was DMV day for me to get my real ID. You're not alone. There's always something going wrong there. You know, for me, it's haunted. But I made the appointment 3 months ago. I walked it in, you know, I walked in the place, the Reno place, the big one. You don't really know what to do, you know, when you walk in there. I've learned that you're supposed to have your phone on. And when you walk in the building, it detects you and sends you a text telling you to sit down and wait for the window to open for you. But so I walked in. I did not get the text. So had to do it again. Go to the information booth. The line. It's a four windows. Two people were running it. Two of the four windows were open. They do have a kiosk. It's really small. It's easy to miss. So when you walk in, you can just sign in that way if you don't get the text. Well, I tried that, and it said, we have no appointment for you today.
What?
So I had to go to customer information booth, 20 minutes in line, and they found out my phone number was off by one digit. I can't understand how that happened because I've had dealings with the DMV. I mean, that should be on their record what my phone number is. Anyway, they corrected it. And said, I'm signed in. I said, okay, well, how long the wait? And I got the shrug. And so anyway, I walked in the big room and sat down. And eventually, the whole thing, my appointment was for 2 o'clock. Eventually, I got called to the window at 3. So it was an hour of what do I do and waiting, you know. So yeah, the DMV will drive you crazy, but there are, I have to tell you, there are some really, really good people there. And Rachel, Window 7, was just awesome. Tears, truly. There was another hiccup because it's a real ID, so they kind of do this investigation while you're sitting there. And Rachel and her supervisor found another John Potter. It was a bad John Potter who racked up violations in Virginia. I've never even been in Virginia. So that took about 5 minutes and they cleared me. You know, I lived in Las Vegas for over 10 years and I used to get pulled over all the time in my first years there because there was a bad John Potter in Las Vegas too. And I would wait in the car at 4 a.m. on my way to my morning show while the officer would spend about 20 minutes to clear me. Anyway, it wasn't so bad at DMV. Thank you, Rachel. And you're not the only really good person there. I've run into some really, really good, helpful people at the DMV. What else? Oh, yesterday I got a Montgomery Ward catalog in the mail.
What?
Did this come 30 years too late? No, they're back. Montgomery Ward. Not the store on Audi, though. Catalog. And I'm now eagerly awaiting my catalog from Charles Chips and Fuller Brush and Finger Hut. Montgomery Ward is likely, likely this is another case of, well, it's a Chinese company that bought the name. You know, like somebody bought Kodak and Polaroid, all these big old American names, you know, that went out of business. Who else did they buy just for the name? Like RCA. RCA's Bausch & Lomb stuff is back. So, okay, what else? In the news this week, the head of the FDA, his name looks like Malarkey, but it's not how you pronounce it. It's Dr. Marty Makary resigned. He probably should have left a long time ago. He had this unique ability to piss everybody off. You know, he'd go back and forth between standing with traditional science and then standing with the nut job stuff. And so nobody much liked him. And recognizing that old Don was about to get him out of here, get him out, the guy said, well, I will now leave. And he said that he was doing so because the FDA had approved fruity flavored vape liquids, and he could not in good principles stand for that. And on the issue of fruity flavored vape liquids, I don't know how you feel. I hate vaping. It does so much damage to young people. Vaping breaks my heart with all the damage they do to their lungs, though we don't know, and we won't know for years what these chemicals are doing. And I recognize that a lot of young people vape. If you think they're not vaping up at your kid's school, you're mistaken. And there are many who say we must outlaw the fruity vapes, or these evil companies are going to draw our children into vaping. And here's my thought on that. We got to remember our core mission statement. And by the way, this aligns with what I was saying about data centers at 9:15 this morning. What is our core mission statement? We're about free people. Free people, smaller government. And again, it breaks my heart that young people vape, and are young people more prone to vape with fruity flavors? Maybe. Probably, sure. Does that mean that you can't have fruity flavors for vape? I think that the flavor of a product is not something that the federal government should be involved in. If you want to rein in a product with too many flavors, please go do something with those Oreo cookies. Please. Those freaking people are out of their minds. They're making every damn kind of Oreo. Peanut butter and chocolate Oreos. Golden Oreos. Candy corn Oreos. Peeps Oreos. Ease up on the Oreos, okay? I take mine straight, okay? But they believe, quite obviously, that they can make any kind of Oreo they want, and so they will. And how is an Oreo in the environment of freedom any different from a vape or a cigar or chewing tobacco or any other thing? Another thing screwing around is Dr. Pepper. They do a lime Dr. Pepper, which sounds disgusting, a Dr. Pepper creamy coconut, Dr. Pepper blackberry. Every flavor there has a Dr. Pepper, but that's their right. You know, if they make it and somebody else wants to buy it, and enough people, you know, buy it to make it lucrative and they can sell it. How is that any of the federal government's business? And how is a vape any different? I know nicotine is addictive. I know tobacco is bad. There's no tobacco typically in vapes, but I also know that freedom is what we're about. And the only way government can protect you from the consequences of your choices is to take away your choices. The only way government can protect you is by enslaving you, and we're not for that. So let's plead with our young people. Do not use the fruity vapes, but let us not use the power of government to forbid people to make fruity vapes. Because as soon as we restrict that freedom, it's open season on freedom. And that's just not what this country is about. Okay, we're going to take one more break, and then we have a candidate for Congressional District 2, Mark Amadei's seat. We have two of the candidates. The first one is coming up at 10:30, minutes from now, and keep it on this station to win your tickets to see Brian Kilmeade and Jimmy Failla. We have a combo ticket pair for two coming up sometime between now and 12 noon. I'm John Potter, going to take a quick break, then we're going to go to the phones. Well, can we take the phone now? All right, let's take the phone now. Bob is calling from Sparks. Data centers. Hey, Bob. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, John. Yeah, I really like that discussion on data centers, but I think you might be a little bit confused. The data centers that use tremendous amount of water are outdated. They don't. The new ones don't do that. They use air cooling instead of water cooling. So they use very little water, okay?
I have heard that. I don't know what's true anymore. Like I said, ranting about this an hour ago, all the source, the local news doesn't examine this. They just, the only feedback you get on how much power we already know, how much water they use, it's kind of like these news sources are new sources I've never heard of. And I would like to see an actual specific study, like if what you say is right, Bob, that they've changed it. Well, what about the old data centers that are still using millions and millions of gallons of water? You know, and
they're already operating if they're old ones, but I mean, any new ones that they put in, pardon me?
I said okay. Eddie, and so, how do we know that?
Well, I heard it from a guy who actually makes them and installs them, et cetera. And you're not surprised that the local news doesn't cover the latest.
No.
Are you surprised?
Okay. Well, they don't examine. Right. They don't say what's right or what's true and what's not true. And so we get the talking heads, the people pro and the people con, and you can't trust them. Anyway, the
now
take on the data centers that I took, if that was an hour ago, Bob, was that we can't carry signs and tell other people what they can't have, okay? And we're in a situation where we don't have state income tax, and this is one way we need to make up for that, because we have a declining industry that used to rule the state.
The other issue is the power usage, okay? Mm-hmm. And they've already developed small nuclear power plants, okay?
Oh, that'd be great.
Or small power plants that you can put on site, okay, that use gas probably, but the nuclear ones are obviously the most advanced type. They generate a lot of power, et cetera. And we have people that have been in the military, in the Navy, that are used to working around small power plants when they're in submarines. And so there's a perfect example of having people like that man those stations. It doesn't take much to man them either. Once they get built, it takes a lot of people to build them, but once they're built, they're practically operate on their own. You only need a couple of people. And if you had a nuclear power plant, you would want one of these or two of these experienced people there manage it.
Wonder how far off in the horizon a nuclear-powered data center would be. I think that's a great thing. I mean, I think nuclear is probably the greenest energy we have right now. I got to run, my friend. You're obviously well-read on this, and I take it to heart. Thank you so much, Bob, for calling. Going to take a break. Be right back. Hang around for your tickets. I'm John Potter, live and local each and every Saturday, 9 to noon, 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk, time 10:20.
Fox at the top, Fox at the bottom, live and local right now.
All the information for the entire Northern Nevada area on one radio station. Welcome to FM News Talk 99.1 and 92.3 FM. News, talk, truth.
Hello?
John Potter, live and local each and every Saturday, 9 to noon. Okay, what else is new? Locally found this in, this is Reno. Washoe County planners are advancing another round of development code changes aimed at increasing affordable housing options by encouraging the construction of smaller houses. Washoe County planner Kat Oakley presented the eighth set of proposed code changes updates to the Washoe County Board of Commissioners. The changes are intended to increase a variety of housing types available while reducing housing costs for residents. And I got to add, it is now the middle class that can't afford local housing now in Reno. Affordable housing projects used to be for lower and lower middle income working people. But we've had this rapid price expansion, as you well know, brought on not just by the supply and demand imbalance created by the crowds of Californians selling there and taking advantage of much lower prices here, but also from the more than you think out of town investors driving up the price. Ideally, it should be Nevadans, locals, that are in the market for a home, but we have the people from out of state driving up the price and the out of state investors buying to rent out their investments. They're competing to buy altogether, sending the prices higher. There was a, about 3-4 years ago, there was a bad fire at a certain address in my neighborhood. We rarely get one in the old Southwest, but I was curious as to the story of this house that burned that I still walk by almost every day to work. And I had some extra time and I looked it up on the Washoe County Assessor's online system. You can also search the Washoe County Recorder's Office for deed records. And the one thing that kind of got my attention was who owned the house. It was an investment company out of somewhere in California, I think San Francisco. And when out-of-town people are buying residential houses as some kind of investment thing, and people's rent or Section 8 or whatever is paying the tab is sending that money outside our community, outside our state, I feel a little screwed over. I'm not a big fan. And it turns out there are a lot of these investors buying houses, and when you want to buy this house or that house, some of the competition for it, you know, and you say, oh my gosh, we can't find an affordable house. It's not because the other family down the road is looking for a house at the same time you are. It's because various investment groups from the East Coast or the West Coast or from another country are looking for investments at the same time you're looking for a house, and they pay cash. And the deal is, well, you and your sweetheart are a family starting out, but the people you're competing against for those houses are big investors, and they've got a lot more money than you do. And so price goes up, and they end up owning our neighborhoods and our communities. And this is tough for me because I'm a big believer in good and honest capitalism, and I believe in the marketplace, but I also believe in protecting your own self-interest. And I think that houses in our communities ought to be owned by people from our communities. And to the extent possible, they ought to be owned by the people who live in them. And, you know, I recognize that buying residential property as an investment is a smart thing. A lot of people have done it. But when it slowly moves from mom and pops who are, well, you know, we bought this house, we used to live in it, we moved out, now we're going to rent it out. When it goes from mom and pops and it starts being, again, a big outside company combining all their money investment groups, they got little LLCs or whatever at the end of their name. Again, I feel like this isn't any good. It's the same deal with a lot of our farmland. There have been huge efforts to buy American farmland by Chinese interests and others, and I don't believe in that either. And when our industries, like even defense industries, increasingly get bought by people or interests from foreign countries, I don't like that either. Again, I know we live in a free market. That's all good. But I also believe that looking out for your own best interest is a prudent and acceptable thing. America should belong to Americans. The people who live in Nevada should own most of the stuff in Nevada. And when I walk up and down a neighborhood street, it should be local people who own these properties, whether they live in them or not, but it should be us who owns them. And to the extent that that could be the case, good. You know, now, do we have to ask government to step in? Because that always makes me nervous. But when we're selling our properties, do we look at the return address of somebody who's making the offer? If I'm selling my house, I will sell it to some folks who walk in with their kids, you know, checking it out to see if it'll work for them. But do I have the discipline to not sell it to some investor from far away, even if that investor from far away offers a lot more money? That's something you have to search your soul for. Me, I don't think I can live with that. This issue always triggers people to talk about how much they paid for their house back in the day. Well, I bought my very first house in 1976, right out of college. It was a tiny, brand new brick home. Didn't have much, one level, two bedrooms, I think maybe just 950 square feet, no garage, little backyard. But to me, it was a beautiful home. It was love at first sight. I still remember my old address. 2912 East Yellowstone Drive, Owensboro, Kentucky, where that's where I had my first full-time radio job, 1976. And I bought that house, my first home, for $21,000, a new brick home. And I had the time of my life in Owensboro, Kentucky. Now, what a culture shock. And I became one of them so easily. Best barbecue in the world. New York Times called Owensboro the U.S. barbecue capital. Favorite restaurant, the Moonlight Barbecue, hanging out by the Ohio River. And there were still paddle boats then. That's not a joke. my Kentucky coworkers kidded me all the time for being a New Yorker. You know, one time I reached for my coffee cup at work and there was a tobacco bug inside. Have you ever seen those monsters? All good fun. And 2 years later, I got the morning job at KCBN Radio. But I love my Kentucky house, and I wanted to keep it and rented it out. That didn't work out. And I remember coming back to sell it, and I cried over the wreck it turned into. So I sold it for $26,000. Back in the day when even lowly radio DJs could buy a new home. And by the way, I looked it up. That old house last sold for $168,000. And that's my "Oh, do you know how much my house used to cost?" story. I'm John Potter, live and local, going to break for Fox News and local news with Greg Neft. And then somebody running for Congress, District 2. FM News Talk, time 10:32.
This is where Nevada comes to hear and talk about the news.
Government is bad and government is evil.
99.1.
And 92.3.
FM Talk, KKFT.
News, talk, truth.
Oh, there he is. Hello, George. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm fine. George Forbush, one of the leading contenders for the congressional district seat Mark Amadei is vacating. I say leading because the polls put you at either number two or number one. I know our poll that we do with the new news, we get a lot of texts, the votes that they come in. Put you up there, and that's something to be admired, considering how many people. What's the count on this now? 13 Republicans and 11 Democrats want to represent Northern Nevada in the U.S. House, replacing Mark Amadei. Let me give the folks your background. You served as deputy sheriff in Winnemucca 7 years. You came back to Washoe County to serve in the Sparks Police Department for another 20 years. And we were just chatting before we came on the air about what you, as a congressman in District 2, can do to help out the kind of sad situation that some of our police departments are in. Specifically, well, let's do Sparks. What's the problem there?
Well, it's not just Sparks. It's Reno and it's some of the other rural agencies as well. But a lot of agencies are completely understaffed. And if you look at the Reno Police Department, just them alone, they are up down about 100 police officers from conversations that I've had with officers there. And a lot of that stemmed back from 2008 when we had the recession and the Reno police department was trying to cut funding because they didn't have the funding, or cut positions because they didn't have the funding, and they'd never hired those officers back. So back in 2008, our population was a lot less than what it is now. We have more people, more crime, less officers. And the problem that they have is they are burnt out. I've talked to officers who are working overtime, double back shifts. Then they have to work all those special events during the summer. And they're not getting the ability to take time off. And I just know what it's like as a police officer when you are tired and you basically stop working to a certain point. And that causes the community to suffer because they're not being able to get out there and answer calls for service appropriately.
The community really suffers because I think what they've done, George, one way to get around this is that they do not answer more and more calls, only the most severe and only injuries. And there's a lot of property crime calls and everything. They're so understaffed. They cannot respond to a stolen car. They can't respond to property damage. They'll ask you on the phone, were there any injuries? And that's where we are now. Those are the only calls that they're forced to answer to because the cities are broke. They can't make up for this huge deficit in the number of officers. What can you as a congressman do in this to alleviate this situation?
Well, one of the things that I want to do is I want to go back to what we did in the late 90s. When I was a police officer then, the federal government used to provide grants to hire police officers. And that hasn't happened in a very long time. And part of the problem is money. So if the federal government can do grants and encourage municipalities to hire police officers back off these grants, that's part of the solution there. So I'm trying to do something where the funding side of it is going to be at least addressed. And hopefully that will help the municipalities across Nevada help with the funding side of it. We also have a cultural change. You know, we used to have a time where a lot of people respected police officers. And in 2020, when you had the defund the police movement, I think that hurt us significantly.
We still have it.
And we still have it. And that's going to be a harder challenge because back in my day when I was trying to get hired on, there might have been two or three positions open and you'd have 300 or 400 people show up. Now we have 15 positions open and you might have 30 people show up. So one of the things that I like to do to address that is I think we need to get back to educating the public on what we really do. And if we were to be able to hire police officers back, one of the things that I would like to see them do as a requirement is one, they either use those police officers to go after sex offenders, because that's another issue that we have. You see that on the news everywhere. But in some agencies, it might be more worthwhile to have them come in and have a police officer that's full-time that works on citizens academies, where they put on these academies, people from the public come in, they learn about police work, and they get to really know what we do and what we don't do versus watching shows like Reno 911. And that might help with recruitment as well.
Oh, you guys hate Reno 911, don't you?
I was Spark, so it never bothered me.
Okay. You've never run for office before, have you?
No, first time.
Why now, of all times? What? Maybe I asked you this the last time, but what really got you off the couch and jump into this huge challenge with 20-some candidates going for District 2?
The straw that broke the camel's back for me was the public land sales. I was seeing a lot of Democrats and Republicans wanting to offer up the sale of public land. And what people may not know about me is I'm a big outdoor guy. I love hunting and fishing and riding my four-wheeler. And just as a native Nevadan, I love the fact that I can go anywhere in the state and walk my dog, not have to ask for permission. If I want to go running, jogging out there, or drive my four-wheeler, I can go do that. And I have seen what happens in other states where when land is sold and it's privatized, you are denied that accessibility. And I don't want to see that happen to Nevada.
Well, I love your idea for the gas prices, bringing in fuel from other sources besides California. Why not? What's going to happen when diesel goes to $8 here? I mean, I tell you, I just noticed that last week the supermarkets, there's been a huge jump in just the last week or two. And I'll tell you, it's because of this. Diesel going for $7 a gallon. What happens when it goes higher? And this is possible to get gas from Utah, isn't it?
It is, because there's currently a plan that Sinclair Petroleum wants to do where they bring a pipeline in from Salt Lake into Nevada. And all we have to do is the federal government and alongside with the state of Nevada and working with Utah, we just got to work through the process to make that happen. But it would be great if we can have fuel coming in from Utah and from California. I would love it if California reversed their policies. And that way we had a pipeline that we can maintain from California and from Utah. But at least we would have that diversity and a backup plan in case something were to happen. Because what people need to remember is we've been seeing a lot of earthquakes lately, right? Little, you know, movement here and there.
Yeah.
If something happened to that pipeline, some type of natural disaster, even if you take politics out of it, we can be in trouble there because there's about 7 million gallons a day that comes to that pipeline, from what I understand.
We need a backup plan, exactly. At least, you know. I understand you have this, and this is a minor issue, I think, for most people, but a major issue for other people, junk cars sitting on somebody's street, and it sits there for weeks. Like, I've heard over months in some cases. I am told you have a simple legal way to to dispose of junk vehicles.
Yes.
What's your solution?
They're basically, it's the junk certificate program. So when I was at Sparks, I was in charge of handling the homeless vehicles, and they would be left, or someone would get arrested, and that person never actually owned that vehicle. So they were basically in possession of a vehicle that was never titled to them. Nobody knew where the title was, so nobody would come collect it. And what I essentially did, in short, was I used the Department of Motor Vehicles to come out and their inspectors to come out and inspect the vehicle. I would get a junk certificate for it, and then basically that vehicle would go to a salvage yard because now you had a piece of paper that replaced the title. And that junk certificate is only good for one thing, salvage. You can't drive that vehicle after that. Once it's issued, it can never hit the road again. But it gives you a legal means to take that vehicle to a salvage yard, and then it can be, you know, recycled.
I really appreciate you coming by and talking to the folks about these issues. And you're making one more visit, right? We're voting starting next Saturday.
We are. I think I have two more visits with you. But
two? Okay,
yeah.
Good.
But one of the things, the other message I would like to convey upon the listeners is I would like everyone out there, if they can, to check their voter registration because early voting starting. And the Department of Motor Vehicles, if you have visited them in the past couple months or longer, especially if you did any changes to your driver's license, they may have automatically registered you as nonpartisan, and you may not even know it. So whether you're a Democrat or Republican, there's a possibility that you don't know that you are no longer part of the party that you want to belong to. So obviously for us, this is the Republican primary. I don't want people out there who want to vote for me not being able to do so. So I would ask them to check their voter registration, and they could go to registertovote.nv.gov to do so.
Yeah, it's kind of a fishy thing there. I refuse to believe that close to 40% of the Nevada population said, I want to be nonpartisan. Just doesn't go. And you can't vote in the primaries.
That's the biggest frustration. I have a lot of people that are independent. They're like, I want to vote for you. I'm like, well, you can't.
There's even a race, George. I think it's a DA where no Democrat is running. It's just two Republicans. So in the primary, that's going to be the election for the DA, and the rest of the Democrats, the nonpartisans, will have no say in who our DA is going to be because it's going to be decided in the Republican primary with no Democrat opponent. And so we're cutting out like 70% of the population from voting in that race.
Well, I would believe in that case, do they not automatically go back to the general? I mean, I guess it depends on if you win on so many percentage
they
points.
They may, but it's a foregone conclusion because we have two people running in the primary. One is going to win that primary, and that would be the person the Republican Party puts on the ballot for the general election, and I think you'll end up with one name there and nobody else being able to vote and choose.
Well, so that race is very interesting in and of itself.
It is. I have my personal favorite, not going to reveal, but George, I like you, and I'm glad you come out and talk to the folks here. So what's that? Oh, man, we have no time. I'm sorry. George, anyway, how can people contact you?
They can go to Facebook, George Forbush for Congress, or you can go to my website. It's Forbush for Congress.
Okay.
That's probably the easiest way. Obviously, Google is the easiest way to find anybody these days.
I don't know, Craig. I hate to hang up on people. Should we take him? You want to do it after the commercials?
That works for me.
What's that? Oh, okay, good. George, can you stick around?
Yes, I can.
All right. We got to hear from people. That's the whole object of this local show. Going to take a break and be back with George very, very shortly. 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk, time 10:50.
This is where Nevada comes to hear and talk about the news in Nevada. 99.1 FM Talk.
News Time, 99.1 and 92.3.
All right, so how it works here is if we get calls, we'll let you stick around and just for 5 minutes. It's George Forbush running for District 2 Congress. Let's go to Paul, Virginia City Highlands, calling about public lands. Hey, Paul, go ahead, sir.
Hi, hey, thanks for keeping George around. The all of the stuff that George has covered is I think sounds great, but the public lands is really a big interest to me. I started hunting and I like to get out and hike. And I don't know what, George, what your marketing, if that's what you call this thing is, but a couple of thoughts for you. There's a lot of off-highway vehicle stores like RideZilla. You got to get flyers in there where the customers see it. And I'm sure their stores also have mailing lists of their customers that maybe they'd be willing to share because it's important for them to maintain that access. And I don't know if, you know, you have to register an off-highway vehicle with the DMV, and I don't know if that's public record or not. But if you could get a mailing list of off-highway vehicle registration and let those people know that they're in jeopardy of losing access, I think that would be plus to you.
Sounds like you got a campaign manager here, George. I got to let you go, Paul. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. I'm out of time, my friend.
You have that show.
Let's go. Okay. Jeff. Jeff is calling from Reno. Jeff, go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for keeping him around. I'll try to be quick. I've always been concerned with, you know, the national debt and government budgets and the idea that so much of our land is owned by the federal government as opposed to probably worse than any other state. The idea of selling public lands, you know, making some, reducing the national debt and having properties that could be taxed sounded like a good idea until George mentioned, you know, this is the other side that I hadn't thought about. Is there a way of balancing the two?
Well, I think the quick solution to me is not spending as much money on the federal side. Our defense budget is huge, and I've had some dealings with that. Working with the DRMO program where we've got military equipment that's literally brand new. I'll give you a quick example. I took on a $650,000 MRAP for the Sparks Police Department that had 90 miles on it. That cost the taxpayer $650,000. And my question is why didn't that stay in service longer with the federal government before they got rid of it?
Wow.
Good question.
Yeah.
I think we need to extend how long we keep. There's this spend it or lose it mentality that we have, not just in the federal government, but in the local government is not good for the taxpayers.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Like I said earlier, George, we like having you around.
Well, thank you.
So we'll see you again as you come by. George Forbush, Republican candidate for the Congressional District 2 seat. Mark Amadei is vacating. What's your campaign website, sir?
It is forbushforcongress.com.
That's a really good website, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
That's well done.
I'll tell my guy that made it.
What's your next appearance?
I think I'm not here next week, but the week after, and then I'm going to be on Lovelock on Tuesday. I'm all over the place. I got to obviously look at my phone from day to day as to where I know I'm going to be sometimes.
That's a big district, isn't it?
It is. It is, but I like it. I like the people out there. They're my kind of people, honestly.
Are you going to go to this thing? Let me see here. It's Carson City. Oh, that's Carson City, though. That's
Carson City is part of my district.
Okay, good. Yeah, it's tomorrow. I'm going to give you the flyer. Jerry Evans is MC Freedom 250 at the Capitol Amphitheater, Carson City, tomorrow, 1 to 4 p.m. There you go, George.
All right, thank you.
This is tailor-made for you here. It's a day of prayer, praise, and thanksgiving for America, food trucks, live music, booths to celebrate 250 years, one nation under God. All right, George Forbush, we talk to you again next Saturday?
I think we skip next Saturday. Oh, I'm back the following. Yep.
All right, sir. Good luck in the big race.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
All right. I'm John Potter, live and local. We have another George. We have another candidate for CD2 coming up next hour. Also next hour, we're giving away tickets to Jimmy Failla, who is appearing at Bartley Ranch. And, of course, Brian Kilmeade. And we have your tickets for those events coming up this next hour on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Fox News next, FM News Talk time, 10:58.